Paulie, what's happening, man? You want to respond to this guy?
Yeah, hey, Steve. Steve, as far as I got a Boston College education. I got a Boston College education.
I'm proud of you, brother. I
was Sports Talk Radio Caller of the Year for the United States in 2005.
Really?
I'm going to guess that you got no further than a high school education, and you're not.
Well,
I've never heard of you before.
Paulie,
so you're hardly even a
conference
on
Sports
Talk
Radio. I'm older
than
you, and I've been listening to talking sports.
I listen to your crap. You're going to listen to me.
Well, you know what? You want to have a conversation, you want to be a big mouth.
Steve, the thing is,
shut up.
I'm not always right, just maybe 90% of the time.
No, you're never right.
I'm
not always right. Never right.
What just happened?
This is Rich and Ken with Ted Johnson on WEEI.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Paulie, Steve, and the truck, they're just like, they're reeling. You know, they're sitting in the corner. They're ready for another round. Did he say he was the Sports Talk Caller of the Year in 2025?
Was that Lorenzo versus the Driveline guys here at Fenway last night, or what was that?
Man, what a day yesterday. But you know what? All I know is that the one thing that is certain is that me and Ken, we missed our own Teddy J. How's the mouth feeling, Teddy? Feeling good?
Feeling a lot better, guys. Good. Thank you for understanding.
Teddy Bear. We missed our Teddy Bear.
What's that?
I call you the Teddy Bear.
a little soft. Yeah, it was... The mouth was swollen up pretty good. Basically, I got a root canal and didn't realize that that's what I was going in for. I thought I was going in for something that was going to be easy, going to pop a tooth in. No. If they had to prepare the tooth to have the tooth put in, they had to cut down deep into the gum. They had to put screws in there. And you feel them twisting and turning it and you're just yanking. And they had to get all like doctored up, man. I mean, it was like a surgery, so they had to be covered in all this stuff so that nothing got in there and got infected. So, and I went in kind of like you did, Rich, thinking this was going to be, I was going to be in and out.
Yeah.
Dude, I was there for 2 hours.
Yeah, I know exactly what you're talking about, where you think it's just a cleaning, and then all of a sudden they start giving you shots in your gums, and you're like, oh, no, this isn't good. Last time I went in yesterday, and it was a deal where it wasn't nearly as extensive as yours, but they did just the right side of my mouth, which means part two, the sequel is coming in 2 weeks.
Yep.
And they told me not to eat for 2 hours, but I was starving. So I literally went to Chick-fil-A and just like jammed it into the left side of my mouth and ate sideways so I didn't turn my tongue into a hamburger.
You got to be very careful. You got to concentrate because if you have one little, breakdown and you chew on the wrong side and you bite down on it when it's so tender, the pain. So,
well, guys, Tatum called just to rip you yesterday.
I don't blame him. All the guys I've called soft, call in. I deserve it. That was kind of a weak effort on my part.
Oh, no, I get it.
I'm looking at line two, and should I even take this?
Already?
I mean, should I do like a 30-second limit?
Yes, 15.
All right. Steve in the truck, line two. What's happening, Steve? How you doing, buddy?
Steve. Hi, Steve.
Gentlemen, how are we doing today? Teddy, I hope you're feeling better.
Thank you, Steve.
You're welcome. Hey, I just wanted to say one thing.
Sure, Steve.
I'm doing all right. Nothing bad about Paulie. But when you said about his BC education, should I have said to him that I was an 8-year veteran? I mean, what does that have to do with anything about him?
Thank you for your service.
Thank you for your service.
That's awesome. But Steve,
Ken. You remember when I brought the tripe up for Lou Maloney and the boys that time? You saw me with my jacket on, but that's neither here nor there. I just enjoyed it yesterday. I thought it was pretty cool.
That was fun, Steve.
No problem, Steve.
Steve, did you say that you were voted 2025 Sports Talk Caller of the Year?
No, that was Paulie. He said.
Okay, thank you, Steve. I thought you had a little more integrity in that. Yes.
Steve's on the cover of Madden, though, which is exciting. That was great to see.
Oh, is that Steve?
Yeah.
Yeah, having Caleb Williams on the cover of Madden is A-okay by me. I still believe in the Madden curse. I don't want anything to do with it.
Yep.
It is, isn't it more times than not an issue? Like if you take a look and you go back to, I think it's like the mid-90s, there's like some sort, like it's legitimate. If it's not more times than not, it's just under 50%. Where whoever's on the cover, something happens to them the next year, whether it's an injury or they're just plagued with a bad season, or somebody on their team, ends up getting injured to where they end up having a horrible season. I forget what it is, but you don't want Drake May anywhere near the cover of Madden.
Okay, fine, but don't you get a sense that it's building again? It's this anti-Patriot sediment. Caleb is the golden boy. He makes one pass.
Mm-hmm.
Granted, it was an amazing pass in a game that they lose in overtime in the playoffs, which everybody watched because it was terrible weather. But Drake goes to a Super Bowl, no Madden cover. what are the power rankings today? You're like in 25th place or something on ESPN?
Incredible. The Patriots are 14th, which is laughable.
The nation hates the New England Patriots again.
Great.
It's back.
Awesome. Isn't that fun? Isn't it more fun?
I love the fact that Drake's flying under the radar a little bit. I do. And I mean, it is incredible, though. Caleb's getting most of the attention and love this offseason.
Yeah.
When Drake finished runner-up in the in the MVP, so
and
you know what?
Won it.
But that's what you he could have won it. You're right, and really, you can make an argument he should have won it. But he Caleb, overrated. Ever since he was hugging his mom in the stands at USC,
he's like Wemby. He's crying all the time.
Yep, that's what did it for me. But put him on the cover, perfect. That's great. That's the way you want it, man. You don't Drake. You want him flying under the radar a little bit. But he's going to show everybody, what they've been missing.
You know what happened is this was the OBJ catch, unfortunately, that jump man throw. How one play when OBJ caught that pass back there made him a superstar, because now every kid wanted to catch the ball that way. They wanted to mock him and reenact. The way that he was able to extend his arm back. And now you're going to have a bunch of people out there trying to do the whole jump pass.
Or backpedal 30 yards before you throw it off your back foot fading away.
I mean, don't get me wrong. That play was amazing, but they lost, right? Like, that was the game they lost, right? That was the one that,
yes.
That was the pass that got it to overtime, and then they ended up losing, right?
Right. They lost to the Rams.
The Bears have 7 primetime games this year. I think the Patriots have 5, which is a lot.
But admit it, the Bears are a fun team to watch. Like, whatever you think about Caleb Williams, it's a pretty exciting team to watch right now.
It is, but just there's so much of just, I don't want to say Tebow. He's obviously a lot better, but it's a lot of just kind of, ugly football.
Tebow, what a rip job.
Until he pulls something out of his ass at the end of games. So it's a little bit of just,
I see what you're saying. As far as Tebow during that miracle season would be just awful. I almost said god awful, which you can't say that about Tebow. He would be awful for 3.5 quarters. Yep. And then he'd have one play at the very end where you're how the F did that happen?
That's it.
Yeah, and people went crazy. I just remember at the end of that season when they came to play the Patriots and there were all these songs written about Tebow, and John Parr did, instead of St. Elmo's fire, he did Tim Tebow's fire. Legitimately, he really did that and recreated it, changed 2 lines. And everyone had Tebow fever, and the whole time I was just thinking, he's going to get stomped when he comes here. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, Brady took that personally. Everyone was talking about Tebow. There were people on ESPN saying, you know what? This might be the time that Brady meets his match. And Brady,
I love that about Tom. I love that about Tom. Some overhyped quarterback comes in to play him, and he just buries him. So the Patriots play the Bears on October 22nd in a primetime game. So that's they go head-to-head. Caleb and Drake this year, which will be fun to see.
That'll be fun. That'll be great. And I don't know whether or not Caleb is going to end up becoming a very good quarterback. I know that he has enough moments that keep me interested.
No doubt. No, yeah. There's something there. He's obviously a very skilled player.
Mm-hmm.
I think between the ears a little bit at times, he doesn't have what it takes. But nonetheless, he's an exciting player to watch.
I also love the fact that he pisses off a lot of people for weird reasons. Look at the fingernails that are painted. You know what they say about, is he dancing around with a purse before he goes on the field? What are we doing here?
Would you trade Vrabel for Ben Johnson? That was kind of at the time they were looking for the Mayo replacement. There was some Ben Johnson chatter. I mean, he did a pretty good job. I give him that. He seems to be kind of a hardo.
Dude, Ben Johnson, interesting guy. I mean, wasn't he? He's kind of calling out the Lions a little bit. He's got a little something. You know what? The fact that Mike had Josh with him, I would say I'm okay with not having. But I see your point. I can see you can make an argument for Drake maybe needing a guy like Ben Johnson. But as long as you got Josh here, I think Mike's the right guy for this job here.
Yeah. Well, this is going to be an interesting day because, first of all, we're going to have in studio in just a couple minutes, Chad Tracy's going to be here. Obviously, the team is not doing well. And we are on the heels of an article coming out about Craig Breslow that's pretty damning about the state of this team, even when Theo Epstein seems to be calling out the way that this team is doing things. And yesterday, I don't know if you heard any of the post-game press conferences that were out there, but their players legitimately saying that there's a reason why things aren't going well at home. And I want to play this clip for you. Matter of fact, I'll play it now before Chad comes in. I think this is a good one to play because after the game, and you know how bad it is. This is a team that on June 3rd has yet to win double-digit games at home, which has not happened since 1923. Is
32.
That what 32? Okay, sorry. I'm a little dyslexic.
94 years.
That's right. All right. So yesterday, Isaiah Connor Falefa, he ended up saying this about how he is rationalizing why the team isn't good at home. Take a listen.
I just feel like on the road we're a very close-knit team. We come home and there's just a lot of people. It's different. It's just a different vibe at home, and we got to figure out a way to make it small like how it is on the road. Yeah, I just feel like at home we see a lot of people that we don't know, or you know, yeah, just don't know that around this area. And when we're on the road, it's just a close-knit group, and we're becoming a really close team. And yeah, we got to find a way to bring that back home.
Okay. He says, feel like at home we see a lot of people that we don't know or you know that are around this area.
Did he mention Lorenzo by name or no?
So there's like 15 different ways you could go with this. And I want to get Chad Tracy's impression of what he said because, you know, is it something as simple as, you know, the families are too much of a big, you know, they're around and it's a distraction? Or is it that you've got all of these different batting coaches coming in here telling people all sorts of different things on how to swing? Or is it that management is here? You know, people like Craig Breslow make the vibe. Obviously, if you read that article, it doesn't seem like he's somebody who is universally loved.
But he said people we don't know. So I would rule out Breslow and probably the hitting coaches, but they do have like four hitting coaches. Yeah. Maybe they don't know all the hitting coaches.
When I hear that, I think of just family and friends. And so they don't. They're not basically, I don't know, getting together at home like they would on the road. So, which I've always been told that baseball camaraderie and you know, guys liking each other isn't as important.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that's always been a BS kind of thing. I always feel like, hey, even though baseball is so much about just an individual sport, you still want to feel like you are together. And I think that raises the play of everybody if you feel like you're all in it together. So maybe at home, they go their separate ways. They don't feel as connected as they do when they're on the road. And so, thus, they play better on the road.
Either way, they got to figure out what the hell's going wrong here.
Yeah. You mean, like that Izzy, IKF, said this? I mean, it's kind of – he's trying to be a leader, I guess. It's probably going to piss some people off.
If he's calling out people who are letting family and even friends be a distraction, then hell yeah, I'm glad he said that. Yeah. If that's what he's talking about – sure, let it out there.
Or if it's guys partying too much in the seaport, or who knows what he's talking about.
That could be it, too. You
know, maybe, but that's why it's a great day to have Chad Tracy on with us. And he'll be in the studio here in just a moment. As a matter of fact, we are not going anywhere. We're going to sit here for 2 minutes, and in 2 minutes, hopefully Chad Tracy will be walking through that door. We'll be right back. It is 93.7 WEEI and a beautiful day down here at Fenway. It is Rich Shurtenley, Ken Laird, three-time Super Bowl champion Teddy J, Ted Johnson, and you can give us a call at 617-779-7937. We love taking your calls. That is the number one way we connect with everybody. I am not on social media during the show. There's too much stuff, too much input. I like talking to the people, and you know what? The calls have been pretty good lately. I'm proud of all of you.
The text line, and we have one 617 texter, Rich. Mm-hmm. Guys, Izzy is talking about the driveline nerds, telling them how to hit.
We talked about that yesterday. We talked about that with Lorenzo, the hitting coach that Caleb Durbin went to. But we are going to have Chad Tracy, interim manager of your Boston Red Sox, here in studio in just a moment. But in the meantime, by the way, we are broadcasting from the Ford Clubhouse Fenway Studio, brought to you by your New England Ford dealers and employee pricing for all. You pay for what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball, and that dirty water. But Stiz, let's get to some sports happen, shall we?
What just happened?
Sports happened.
And Sports Happened is brought to you by Jeffrey Glassman Injury Lawyers, Boston's go-to injury attorney for over 30 years. If you've been hurt in a car or work accident, you got to get Glassman. Call all sevens, 617-777-7777. Hey, look, it's Pete Alonso, the guy the Red Sox were thinking about going after this offseason. Let's play the clip, shall we?
Do we have to?
Let's go.
Oh, God, jeez.
I'm a fan of Tigger myself.
Yeah, of course. The wonderful thing about Tigger is Tigger's the only one. Here's the 2-2.
He's
drilled to left. If it's high enough, it's out of here, and it is gone. That'll make Connelly Early feel like Eeyore. A two-run blast. Another pitch. Just got too much of the plate, and it is 3-1-0s.
That's like jumping into a conversation your friends are having at a party. Just like, hey, what
no
the
contract.
F are you talking
about? Yeah, what?
Yeah, all right. Well, sure.
Yeah.
You go for
polar
it.
Bear.
Anything to keep yourself entertained nowadays.
I'm
so
a fan
all
of Tigger
the,
myself.
Yes, you are.
Good job, Lenny.
Well, all of these could have hads and didn't go afters that keep coming to Fenway and making the Red Sox pay. One day it's Kyle Schwarber, and the next, Pete Alonso handing the Red Sox another L at home. And the date, as I was saying, June 3rd, yet to have double-digit wins at home. That is truly insane. The Sox now stand at MLB worst 9-20 at home, their worst home record through 29 games since going 7-22, as you said, in 1932.
Which the Herald had a good, I mean, I like going back memory lane. The 1932 campaign marked the end of J.A. Robert Quinn's decade-long ownership, a period where the Red Sox finished last 8 of 10 seasons, and Fenway fell into disrepair. Fires ravaged the left field bleachers, and they had no money to afford to renovate. So the new owner had to come in, the Tom Yawkey, and purchase it and fix it up. But this was like low point of Fenway history, 1932, last time you were this bad.
And they still have not fixed the seats on the first line drive that face the outfield, which are just not good seats. You ever sat in those seats before?
Oh, yeah, facing the wrong way?
Yeah, yeah. You're facing the outfield.
Yeah.
Everything.
Well, you get to look at Willier.
Made back then. Well, that yeah, it's good. Willier's, you know, fun guy to watch, but... everybody must have been 5'5" back in 100 years ago because right. It's designed for short people out there.
Quick aside, I know we're talking, not to pivot to the Pats, but were you surprised when you see A.J. Brown and he's such a like high ball catcher, a tough guy that goes, he's only 6'1". He's shorter than Dobbs. He's shorter than, who else was out there with him? One of the other guys. But it's like, I kind of was expecting 6'5" giant coming in here.
Yeah, like Randy Moss.
Yeah, he's a little guy. He's not Randy Moss.
It's his athleticism, man.
That and it's long arms and big hands. So I've always said, if you can be an exceptional, you have a leg up on every athlete if you have long arms and big hands. You can play basketball. You can pitch. You can play football, be a receiver. Long arms and big hands are big, big kind of feathers in your cap if you're an athlete.
That was like Gronk, right? Didn't he have like absurdly big fingers?
Ginormous.
Yeah. It was like shaking a bananas. It was, you know, like when he put on a glove, it was like Mickey Mouse. It was huge.
Oh, yeah. Think about it. I mean, just the way you can catch the NFL football is, I think, big.
Yeah.
Like, and I have just above average hands, and it's hard for me to throw a spiral because the football is so big in the NFL.
Yeah.
So having bigger hands certainly helps.
Well, so the Sox, it's really a weird place there. They've lost 12 of their last 16 home games. They've dropped 9 of the last 11. I saw Bradford write last night that the Sox' 17 home runs at home are easily the fewest in baseball, trailing the next lowest, the Rangers, by 6.
Ish.
It also is 32 fewer than the Mariners, who have hit more home runs in their home ballpark than any other team.
By the way, quick update, Chad Tracy, 230, meeting running late, 230.
Okay, so, all right. Well,
apologies,
we'll accommodate.
Yep.
Just coming in now.
Absolutely. All right, so what are you seeing? What the hell's going on? How can you change any of this? Are you, after reading that Breslow article, do you have any faith that anything is going to change?
Honestly, Ted, a question for you. Would you want, if Izzy is speaking for the team, there's too many people.
Let's go back, yeah.
Would you want the manager to come in and say, hey, everybody out, like put in some kind of rules or regulations, and would they let an interim manager do that? Just limit the number of people and mandate that you're here early or whatever.
Mandate like what they say to the media?
No, just that the players, players only, you know, no associates, no hangers-on.
Oh,
kind of more strict rules.
I wouldn't mind that considering, and I think part of the reason that they're playing as bad as at home as they are is because this team profiles as a younger team.
Yeah.
There's a lot of new players here. There's a lot of young players here. And that, to me, is probably the worst combination for a Red Sox team. For playing well at home, you can feel the energy immediately. If you're not hitting, if you're not playing well, it's palatable. It's not too dissimilar to what I think we talk about when the Bruins are at home at times. The same thing, and things start going sideways there. So a young team that's never experienced Fenway, that's just getting an understanding, new players coming in that've never played for the Red Sox, the pressure to perform at home is something that you can just walk out and feel instantly. And so when things don't go good at home, it just manifests and snowballs. To your question, what can you – so players only, I don't know if the – you don't want the manager really kind of leading the charge on that. You know, maybe if Cora was here, but I don't think Chad Tracy feels like that's his role. That's kind of what you need an older, established player to do. And I don't know who that guy would be.
Right, who is
Trey? Just got here.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So that's
Sonny Gray. I guess is like he's 36. I mean, Sonny's pitcher. Like, so
I pitch every 5 days. Is he really the guy? So there really isn't that guy that just jumps out at you that would maybe lead the charge. And to your answer, Rich, what can they do to change fortunes? I mean, other than a trade, I have no idea.
Yeah,
other we'll than a trade I have
it,
no idea.
Make a trade. Maybe that is the thing. Just anything to change the dynamic of what's going on right now.
Yeah, you know. But I also kind of want to touch on something you were saying is that when you heard that comment about, you know, there being, we see a lot of people that we don't know or you know around this area. It's, and we're becoming a close team when we're on the road, but we got to find a way to bring that back home. Was there ever been a team that you've been on, Ted, where you got a sense that people were staying out late, they were partying a little too much, and that somebody had to step in and be the veteran or maybe even a coach and say, that's not how we do things around here. You need to get your head in the game.
Yeah, it was kind of a case by case. It was never like a group of guys.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I don't ever remember that being an issue because you play football for a shorter amount of time. There's not as many games. You practice so regimented that, I mean, guys going out, if they're going out, hard, it would impact their abilities in practice, and we'd all see it. I never remember that being like an issue with a lot of guys.
Yeah.
Maybe one guy here and there, but for the most part, it's just the way football is kind of scheduled and only 16 games at the time. It's regimented in such a way that guys, and then when you go on the road, you have night meetings at the hotel night before a game at 8 o'clock, and then you have bed check.
Yeah.
Right. So they don't have bed check, I don't think, in baseball. I don't think they do in hockey. I don't think a lot of these sports. So they're not, because there's so many games that they want to treat them like adults. So they don't have that. And so they're not regulated as much. Football players, you got to treat us like we're kids, man. I mean, you just, that's the best way to do it, because it's a short season and you don't want anybody screwing up. And there's too much on the line because you can play once a week. So if you go out there and jeopardize the team winning that game because of something you do,
it means everything.
It means everything.
Yeah. And you know what? It's also one or two nights, you know, like on the road. Like if you have to travel somewhere, you know, like unless you're sometimes West Coast, you guys would stay there for several days, but max
2 days at the most.
Yeah, 2 days at the most. But with baseball, I actually don't know. And I'd like to know kind of what's the better advantage. Is it not having any of the distractions at home, or is it being able to sleep in your own bed, you know, being in a comfortable place, maybe having the, you know, food you're used to, the people around you that you're used to? I don't know where the advantage is. All I know is it sure as hell with this team doesn't seem to be here.
Well, the bigger issue seems to be they are not built to succeed at a park which benefits right-hand power hitting like freaking Pete Alonso. You know what I mean? So
of all the parks, this is the one that's the most inexcusable for them to have this record.
Right. So it seems to be roster-driven. Our buddy Gordo put out a poll today. He's from the Playtesting Pod, the Odyssey podcast. And where are you on Craig Breslow? Fully in? Undecided, give at least until the offseason or fire him today. No surprise, over 500 votes, 75% fire Breslow today. Is
75%.
75%. The next highest is give until the offseason.
I'm going to wait until Chad Tracy's here for me to give my opinion on that.
He
should be walking in the door here in just a moment. As a matter of fact, we'll go ahead and take a break. And when we get back, interim manager of your Boston Red Sox, Chad Tracy, will join us. It is a gorgeous day for the Red Sox to lose here at home. Let's hope they
always lose the first game of a series. They'll turn it right around.
We have a pretty good track record, though. I think the day that we're usually the days we're here, I believe, what is this, like the seventh day or something? I think like four or five of the days they've won. Like out of the nine that they've won at home,
for this team,
we've got a huge, right, a decent chunk of them. So there you go, Ken. You're just
how did we not? And I blame Arcand because he's supposed to be Mr. Locke. How did we not predict a polar bear home run last night? That was the most obvious thing. Alonso was going to go deep.
Sure, but unfortunately, that was it's so funny when these players that they were in on, or quote unquote in on, like when Schwarber came here and just embarrassed the Red Sox, and then of course Alonso does that and kicks their ass.
Can I just point out real quick though? It was May 27th. The Red Sox beat the Atlanta Braves.
Oh boy.
Yep.
8-0.
Yep.
And that Thursday after that game, Rich comes in and is like, this team is going all the way.
It was shocking. It was
awesome.
I said, winning the World Series.
Winning the World Series.
Get ready. It's a dynasty in the making.
And honestly, since that time, I mean, they're just 2-3. I mean, they're 2-3, you know, right, in their last five games since that game. So, I mean, you've kind of come off that stoop pretty good.
Well, Ed Breslow was on before the game on Nesson and sort of doubled down that he still believes in this team. They're hitting better. He feels like if they
what's he supposed to say? His job's on the line.
Well,
you know, like that's the thing. Is it what's he going to say? You know what? I'm really disappointed in this team that I put together.
He does. You got to give him credit for it, though. He is like leaning into it hard.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, every indicator tells you this team, they thought by their prediction models was going to be a mid 90s winning team.
I know.
That's what they thought at the beginning of the season.
I know.
They're still sticking to that. And part of me is like, you know what? If you're going to go down, you're going to go down feeling like you did it your way, and you're not going to lose your conviction. But I don't know what would give you any reason to feel good about this team, because even when they're hitting, their pitching doesn't pitch well, and even when they're pitching well, their hitting's not. So it's just been a maddening season.
You know what I'm feeling? I'm feeling that Chad Tracy was supposed to be here at 2:15, and we've been told that he's going to be a little bit later. Wonder why?
Oh, don't wait. What are you saying? Major changes here on a Wednesday?
I'm not saying major changes. But if there's ever been a time where you need to have a team meeting, maybe we're there.
Well, of all the low points in the season, is this the lowest of the low?
Yeah.
Are we there?
What's 9 games under? I think it is. This is maybe tied for it. I think it is.
Okay. I thought maybe they were never 10 games under. I feel like they have been.
Maybe they were.
It's I don't know. Maybe with Crochet having a setback and Roman Anthony not being, it just feels when you pitch, you give up 4 runs and you still can't win.
I know. You still have an 18% chance to make the playoffs. It's unbelievable. As I pull this up, it's like they're only 4 games back of the wild cards. But 4 is getting better than we used to say. Only 2 back. Now it's 4.
You know what? If Breslow is still being that positive, people have called it, toxic positivity?
Toxic positivity, yeah.
Positivity. It's almost like it's kind of a good way to put it. What I can't hear him say is, hey, we're only 4 out of the wild card.
It drives me crazy.
That will drive me crazy if they reference how far they are from getting into the wild
card. Because there's also, I think, is it 5 or 6 teams ahead of them right now for the wild card? You could say that you're just a few games out, but you got a huge stockpile of people who are ahead of your ass.
But they just have to get back to 500, which requires a 10-game heater. You need to go on a winning streak. Your pitching's got to be unbelievable. And they were scoring. They just did score 9 runs back-to-back on the road. So I think that's why Breslow was feeling himself. It felt like the offense had turned a corner, right?
Yeah.
Coming off that road trip. And then you're back to 5 hits yesterday and 2 runs. It's unbelievable. They've had 15 home games where they've scored 2 runs or less. The 24 of the 59 games on the year, they've scored 2 runs or less. So half the time you turn them on, it's the sack fly offense. You're praying for a bunt and a sack fly.
Yeah.
It's hard to watch as a product.
What is it human nature wise, Ted, being on one side of the ball and knowing that you're doing your job and the other side is not?
It's tough. But you cannot. And that was that's happened a couple times where it, usually the D coordinator Rack has to step in. Hey, we're not saying anything bad about the offense. We're a team.
Yeah.
But there is a dynamic of play there.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? And so what you'll see is more veterans participating in practices during the week to sharpen the offense up.
Yeah.
It's like we go, okay, how can we help this offense? You know what? Instead of the guys that play behind you, the backups getting most of the reps on scout team, we'll start taking more reps. We'll start doing scout team to give them a better look to help them hopefully be better prepared when the game comes on Sunday. So there's things you can do to maybe help the other side out in football. I don't know how you do that in baseball.
I know. It just seems like a completely different beast. Like if you're sitting there and you're pitching your ass off and you've got a couple of guys who are doing the same and you've got a bunch of dudes getting on the plate and not able to help you out at all, you see your numbers taking a hit. Obviously, nobody wants to be able to take a look at your wins and losses when it's not fair. They don't see the whole picture. I don't know how long you can take it until it actually starts to gnaw at you and almost becomes in your head after
a while. Ted, what was the story you were telling us about Bregman last year? You were like Tier 1 Turpin. You had access to the players' lot.
Yep. It was amazing. Red carpet. Come on in, Teddy J. This year, sorry, kid.
And Bregman had guys here early. It was kind of your
thought. Well, that was the first thing I noticed was you drive. So I used to come on the air at 3 o'clock. So I'd get here at a certain time where some players were here, but the majority of players early in the season last year hadn't got to the stadium yet. And so I had plenty of places to park when I first started coming to do shows here last year at Fenway. And then as the season started going on and Devers was traded and they started kind of, turning things around. You heard stories of Bregman getting together with not only the hitters, but the pitchers to help them doing scouting reports with those guys. All of a sudden, the middle of the season, probably right around now, mid-June, I started seeing more and more cars showing up earlier to Fenway because that just told me there's more buy-in now.
What a great observation. Yeah. Like that is, that's because, that's how you can turn a team around. You just get one guy who just demands accountability.
Right. IKF. You know, Izzy's on it. He's calling people out now. He's like AJ Brown.
Dude, I love what he said yesterday. Like, if this is a real problem where you've got people around who aren't supposed to be around and are distractions, I love the fact that he said that in public.
I thought it was a kind of a softball critique. It wasn't like it was, you know, he was telling how he felt, but it wasn't like directed at anyone in personal, you know? So I liked what he said.
All right, let's
quick update from the Red Sox. They are wrapping up soon. Sorry for the delay. Chad Tracy will be on his way shortly.
Oh, I wonder what they're wrapping up. Let's go to Joe on line two. Joe, what's happening, my man? How you doing?
Hey, Joe.
Hey, guys. What's up?
What's up?
Hey, I don't care if these guys are four games out from a wild card or knocking on the door. Does anybody have any faith that they can win a series?
No, it's a great point.
I mean,
right?
They can't win three out of four now.
Yeah,
Breslow's the only guy, and he stayed at his pitching. His pitchers.
But if you got you got Crochet and Roman Anthony back, and they're performing the way we thought going into the year, then yes.
Yeah. But I just remember it was an article I read last week where Breslow pointed to the fact that he pointed out the pitching. He feels good about winning series in the playoffs if they get there because
get a
of their pitching.
And you have Slayton, Whitlock, Chapman, and you get Crochet to get you six scoreless. You can win a game. Absolutely, you can win a series.
Yep.
But again,
he mentioned just the starters. He didn't even mention Whitlock and Slayton and those guys. But that's so he's very bullish on the starting pitching for this team. That if they get to the playoffs, that they can win a series or two just based off of their pitching.
By the way, you know what I love? I love that we have somebody on hold and it says just wants to listen.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody who obviously doesn't have access to an app or like a radio. I do love that. That just shows, you know, what? And I love the fact that whoever put him on hold did it because I want you to listen too, Bob. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Hang in there, Bob. You know what? If you want to talk to us, we'll put you on, Bob. We'll let you.
Oh, he just wants to listen.
He just wants to listen. All right. Hey, Bob, what's up, buddy? How you doing? Bob.
Oh, you put him on the spot. Now.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Bob?
What show is this?
How long have you been on hold?
I thought you were listening to us.
Is it Mike and the Mad Dog?
Yes, 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 exactly.
Dog.
Hey, guys, Mike and the Mad Dog. How you doing?
Well, that was a show. That was a good show.
It was a good show. It definitely. I love Mad Dog.
We model ourselves over to the Mad Dog.
Hey, you hung up on Bob. Oh, no, Bob hung up, I think. I'm not sure what happened. All right, Chad Tracy, cross your fingers.
On the way, I'm told.
He is on the way from what we've been told. We will get to him right after this. It is 93.7 WEEI, Rich Schertenlieb, Ken Laird with three-time Super Bowl champion Ted Johnson, and we are down at Fenway right now. Beautiful day. Beautiful. A little warm. Shouldn't have worn the long-sleeve black shirt. A little smelly over here. I apologize to our guest here in studio, but that's what comes with the territory when you have a man with Swiss blood like me. We are in the Ford Clubhouse at Fenway Studio, brought to you by New England Ford Dealers. Employee pricing for all. You pay for what we pay. Ford, the official vehicle of Major League Baseball and that dirty water. And with us right now, Sox manager Chad Tracy, and he is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Thanks for coming back and hanging out with us today, Mr. Tracy.
Thanks for having me.
So we were kind of speculating because I know originally our interview was set up for 2:15, and there was like we kept getting texts saying that you were going to be a little bit later. Anything going on that we should know about?
No, there was just a few different handful of conversations that popped up that I had to handle before I came down.
Okay, none of those were like team meeting-esque or
anything? No.
Okay.
Nothing like that.
All right. There was an interesting comment yesterday. Obviously, the team, you know, it's at home. It's just you seem to be snake-bitten. It's a very strange thing. I know that right now, I believe 9 wins at home, which I think is the worst in the league. But I did find a comment yesterday from Izzy to be after the game. It raised some eyebrows because it might have given us an interesting look as to what he believes might be going on and why the team isn't doing well at home. He said, "I feel like on the road we're a very close-knit team. We come home and there's just a lot of people. A lot of people, it's different. It's just a different vibe at home, and we've got to figure out a way to make it small like how it is on the road. Just feel like at home we see a lot of people that we don't know or you know that are around this area. It's just a close-knit group, and we were becoming a really close team, and yeah, we got to find a way to bring that back home." What do you feel about his comments? What do you think he means by all of that?
Broadly, I just think there's a lot more people at Fenway. You know, it's the nature of, first of all, it's a big market. There's a lot of people. You go out for batting practice. There's fans on the field. There's tons of media. That's part of it here. I do think, and I don't want to speak for him, it's not wrong. Like when we do, when you go on the road, you're all together. There's nowhere to go. Like you're not necessarily rushing out to get to your family because it's just us. You're getting on the bus together to and from the ballpark. And there's a very small contingent of media that's there. They're in there for 45 minutes, and it really is a little bit. But when you come here, it's different. I do, like, as I watched him answer that, like, there was a long pause before he answered when you watch it. And I had the similar pause when they asked, like, sometimes you're searching for that answer. We all are, yeah. Right? And we know that we're, you know, a good streak at home away from turning this around. But sometimes you're, you know, it's that feeling of like you're searching for the answer and you're, you know, playing out what could it be, right? So we're always looking at like how can we do that. But I think broadly he means it feels smaller on the road because it is. It is when you go to Kansas City or Detroit or whatever. It's not Fenway Park and there's just less going on. But at the same time, like we got to find a way to make it small and deal with that ourselves because it's not going to change.
How do you make it small? Like that's like how do you address that? Because obviously he feels that. This is probably something that, or at least hopes it sound like, that he wants to have this be a little more controlled with less people. How do you do that?
You can't control, I got to ask is too, but I don't think you control how much media there, wherever, but you broadly, you want to know the answer? You win some games. You win some games here and it becomes less of a conversation. That's that's my answer.
Sure.
Is you come home and you have a stretch at home when you play and you win four or five in a row and everybody stops talking about it. Like that's a big part. But I don't ignore what he says and I think, you know, just extra effort from all of our part to make it mostly about us, our group of 26 that's playing the game that night, and try your very best to eliminate all the other stuff. Like, that doesn't matter over there. That doesn't matter over there. It's just about us, right? And let's get it done. So, but I do think a lot of things like this, these topics tend to disappear if you go out and have a good stretch at home.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Winning cures all.
Yes.
Some people read into this, Chad, maybe incorrectly, that there are too many hitting coaches or voices, hitting voices or people that are around the cage, is that related at all to what is he
saying? No, there hasn't been a single random hitting person that's come in. It's the same four guys that we've had since the changes were made, and those are the same guys that are in there. So, no, that's the thing. There's a lot of things like, oh, there's a bunch of extra people. And that's not necessarily the case. It's just, I think broadly, there's just more people around, and I don't think it necessarily means just Red Sox people. Just think there's just a lot more going on at Fenway Park than there is at other places.
What do you make of Caleb Durbin and our Narvaez as well going outside the organization to get batting help? We actually talked to Lorenzo Garmendia, who runs a place right up the street. I think it's Gratton Baseball. Mm-hmm. Caleb, I guess, reached out to him and ended up getting help with him. I think he came to the park yesterday and actually helped him. You know, it is shocking from the outside looking in because you're like, wow, this is the Boston Red Sox. You would think that they had the best batting coaches and you wouldn't have to go outside of the organization. What do you think about that when something like that happens?
I think broadly there's probably a lot more players than you guys know that like have. I mean, when these guys go home in the offseason, you don't have enough hitting coaches to go home with them. They have people they work with. Yeah. And I think there's a ton of players that have hitting coaches or people they work with in the offseason that know them that they probably reach out to for help.
But this is in the season at home.
Right. He's working hard with our guys too. Like, shoot, he's taking early hitting in Kansas City. He's working on all the things that he talked about, getting the ball in the air, the vacancy on the right side of the field that he talked about. Like, I watched him take two sessions of early hitting on one of the most recent road trips, working on driving the ball to the opposite field and getting the ball off the ground. So, I these things get play, you know, because it shows up on social media. I'm like, it doesn't mean that he's not working with our guys, working his tail off, like a lot of hours with our guys to get right. But I do think people talk to other people, you know, as well outside of here. You know, if they have people they're close with, that happens a lot.
In baseball, that's just kind of understood. That's how the ecosystem works. Because, I had a coach that would never want us getting advice from anybody. They're very territorial, whether it be trainers, coaches, hitting coaches. Baseball is different. It's a different
kind of ecosystem. I think there is the ecosystems, particularly, I know it's during the season, but in the off season, like there's, you know, cohesion on finding out every guy when they go home in the off season, where you going, where you're going to be training, who you're working with, so we can be in communication with those types of people. Say, here's what we were doing in the season. Here's what we've been really pushing, and you're trying to get on board because you know that's going to happen. It's a long off season where they spend a lot of time alone, and you have to have that communication. So, yes, I think it is a different ecosystem. You know guys have to go get their work in. They're going to have people that do that, but you want to be on the same page. So I think that doesn't throw up any big radars for me. The most important thing to me right now is Caleb Durbin starting to swing the bat pretty good, and that helps the bottom of our order in a big way.
Speaking of swinging the bat, how's Roman Anthony taking his injury?
He's doing okay. I think he's probably, you know, frustrated on a couple of. I think he's frustrated that he can't be out there with us. There's been a lot of attention around it. That's another. It comes with the territory here. There's a lot of attention around it because he's not able to play right now. But I do think enough people internally have reached out to him and let him know, like, try not to get too caught up in the noise of things that are happening that maybe people don't know that are involved. Like, we got your back. Yeah. We want you healthy. We want you back. But we want you to get back healthy.
Yeah.
You know, not playing hurt. So, I think Roman's very even-keeled. You guys have heard me say that before. He's a very even-keeled person. He doesn't get too high or too low. He's focused on getting himself healthy and right so he can be in the lineup and help us.
Has he expressed any frustration on the mischaracterization of what his injury was by Sam Kennedy?
Roman doesn't do a lot of expressing frustration. I've talked to him a good bit. He's not one that gets too bent out of shape about a lot of things. He doesn't do that. Whether or not he is, you guys could ask him. But I think Roman right now is just fine as far as knowing the people inside the room. Like, we're good. Like, we got to get you healthy. And we certainly don't want to ask you to go out there and swing a bat if you're having jolting pain in your hand or whatever it is. Like,
yeah.
We just got to get him right. So he's, believe me, you talk enough to him, you'll realize he doesn't get, you know, even on the bad end, he doesn't get overly frustrated and boisterous with that stuff. He just focuses on what he has to do.
That's good, because that's got to suck, being in his position. Like, yeah. Just wanting to play, and then especially when you feel that you're about to take that next step as you're seeing the dry swings.
Right.
And then you just go, here we go again, and where he has a little bit of a back, I don't want to say a backslide.
Yeah.
But it's not where he wants to be.
Right.
And that's got to be tough, having a young player especially like that, where you just kind of almost got to be like, dude, just hang in there. Don't listen to the noise.
Right.
And just try to keep your head in it.
Right. And you're right about it. It's like a lot of people that want to go to the term, you know, oh, he had a setback, right?
Yeah, right.
Like, not necessarily. Like, when you're coming back from an injury, you expect there to be, you know, especially that, you expect there to be things like, I'm going good. Oop, that didn't feel very, you know, it's ups and downs. That's part of coming back from an injury.
Yeah.
It very rarely just goes perfectly, like, oh, we're going to start and everything, boom, 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 and everything's perfect. Like, that's not usually how most of them go.
Yeah.
So making sure that he knows, like, you know, that we support him, and like that, you know, that we're not like pushing this guy to play hurt. You know, we want him to be healthy. And I think he knows that.
Does your gut say after the All-Star break? Mostly?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I won't say that because we usually get in trouble when we try to put timetables on things and it doesn't happen, or it happens earlier. Like, you just don't know. I think the best way you can handle that is, everybody's body is going to respond to different things, different injuries differently, and you got to go with the flow of how that guy is improving and how he's feeling.
Yeah.
And when he starts to feel really good, you give him more, you give him more, you give him more, then you get him on a rehab assignment and get him back. So when that happens, we'll do that with Roman. I don't want to put a timetable. Like, I hope it's sooner than that,
yeah.
But like, you just don't know.
Well, Chad, we're talking to Chad Tracy. And there's something I just want to get your opinion on, because you the players seem to like gravitate towards you. You seem to be a guy who talks their language. And there was an article in the Boston Globe about how there's an impression around the league that the team has been leaning a little too hard on analytics and less on getting to know the actual player when they're looking around to, you know, either bringing players in. But even Theo Epstein said on a recent podcast, he had a really interesting quote saying, what really makes a person tick as a player has become a lost art. Do you kind of feel the same? Is that baseball, not as much even the Red Sox, but just baseball in general, might be relying too much on numbers and not as much in actually doing the work and spending time with the players and getting to know them and saying, you know what, a guy like Kyle Schwarber may be over 30 and he might not be exactly, you know, what the algorithm says is good, but my God, this guy can still hit bombs and he seems like a gamer.
He can hit, can't he?
Yes, he can. Unfortunately, Red Sox know that too well.
I think it's a good question. I think the secret in that whole thing is doing both.
Yeah.
And being good at doing both. I think you're both are right. Like, you, there are over time, and I don't want to even use the word analytics. Like, you know, it's statistics. Statistically, when you look at players, like, over time, over larger samples, like, you know, have a pretty good idea of what players they reveal, who they are, what they may struggle with, you know, in certain situations versus lefties, like, it reveals. But at the same time, like, Yes, like that piece that you talked about, like understanding the player,
yeah,
having conversations with them, knowing who needs to be pushed and who needs to be patted on the back, like all these different kinds of things. Like,
yeah,
those are really, really important. And you, but that being said, you still need to bat it. But if I have X player that's a little better at that, then maybe there's a pinch hit opportunity there or whatever. So you have to know that information, and it's very rarely wrong information.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, you got to communicate, and you have to know that other side of it. And that makes players feel more engaged too. So for me, it lies somewhere in the middle there, is like knowing the information, but having people around that aren't afraid to have those conversations and really get in deep with the player. That's really important too.
Chad, any good news on Whitlock's return or Crochet?
Whitlock's doing really good. He threw a pretty intense side yesterday, so everything on track feels good. He's been feeling better every single day. So we'll see what next steps are for him. He may go throw a rehab or something just to make sure that he's up and ready. He hasn't been down long, but things are progressing really nicely there. And then, Garrett, just the imaging just showed a very small strain in the lat. He's been improving each day too, so we're just basically in wait mode of like when he's asymptomatic to the trainers, you know, testing and stuff, he can resume throwing. When that's going to be, I don't know, but it wasn't a serious thing that we found, but we do have to wait until he's asymptomatic.
What does this team need to win more games at home?
You're going to ask me that. I'm going to give you the pause, right? like Izzy or I did yesterday with the media too. I give you the pause because it's like we did nothing. We just need to play like we did in Cleveland, right? Like we, you know, there was games here last week that we very easily could have won, and it's like you can pick apart and why didn't you? It's like, well, maybe one was we had a lead and the bullpen didn't hold one day, right? Or one was not a great start, but then we started banging the ball around and came up one run short. Mm-hmm. There's games within that that we could have won, and we just need to put together a little stretch where, you know, you win four or something in a row and you kind of get this whole thing, and the player feels like, all right, we've conquered that, now let's go.
Yeah,
that's easier said than done. I get it, but we need a stretch. We need a good stretch. That's really it.
Can I throw out just you can shoot it down, the one suggestion is, it the team profiles as a young team, so young guys playing in Fenway.
Yep,
it's a different vibe. You have new players that are coming in for the first time. Is it all maybe just the profile of the team because it's young and you have so many new guys on this team and playing for the Red Sox in Fenway for the first time that might be somewhat of a factor why they're not playing as good at home?
It could be, but then you'd say, well, what about X game that we lost 8-7? We scored 7 runs. We banged it around. They looked fine. They were comfortable.
Yeah.
I think there's something too, like, you know, like I think Izzy had made a comment like, man, if – you know, jump out to like a 3 or 4-0 lead and play with the lead, get the fans involved early. Like, that stuff happens. Sometimes it's out of your control if a guy's out there dealing against you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I won't ignore, dismiss, like, you know, guys that are here for the first time. Maybe, you know, they look around. But I think there's been plenty of instances in my time here, at least at Fenway, where like we're playing a good baseball game, you know, everything looks fine. Nobody looks nervous to me. They're getting after it, like, and they're doing what they're supposed to. And we come up a run short. One thing happens in a game that goes against us and ends up costing us the game. So we have to win at home. Like we're not hiding from that. Like if we continue this, like, you know, we're going to end up treading water like we have. The good thing is we're playing very good on the road. Most teams don't do that. So in a way that's helping us, you know, somewhat stay afloat. But we need a stretch at home. We absolutely do.
Chad Tracy, should the team have to earn it, Sweet Caroline's? Like if the team is getting their ass kicked, is it okay to play Sweet Caroline?
I don't even know if I should answer. I don't. It's a staple. It's a staple of Fenway, I guess. You know, it's like it's.
But it's like, I mean, you look at like Geno time at the Celtics. They only play that when it's like near the end of the game and it's a blowout and it's a big party. It's a celebration. There's nothing weirder than having like a game just get like blown or somebody gives up a bomb and you're sitting there and you're all pissed off and then you're like, no,
right.
No, I'm not feeling it right.
All the more reason we need a stretch at home.
That's right. That's
they
right.
Play Sweet Caroline. We're winning 5 nights in a row.
That will feel a lot better. Yeah. Well, Chad Tracy, thank you so much for coming in, and we always appreciate you coming in the studio. And listen, let's cross our fingers, man. Let's hope we get some home wins.
Thanks for having me.
Let's do it. Hey, always great to have you, Chad. All right. That was Chad Tracy, your manager of the Boston Red Sox, brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, the official supermarket of the Red Sox Radio Network, by Arbella, here for baseball fans, here for good, and by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when your drains don't flow. Rob Bradford will join us next.